Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what's up? Here it is, once again, you are listening live to the Boxing Source Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio, which is powered by the MRM Broadcasting Channel. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst of the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. You catch articles on the CHD on sports.com. And you can also catch the sister shows here on the MRM Broadcasting Channel. We are going to get into the about what happened over the week in the sport of boxing. Just going to run a couple of commercials right quick, and we'll get right into it. The number to dial in to talk live is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The Cold Hard Truth on Sports, every Tuesday at 8:30 p.m. on the MRM Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. The Executioner, Matthew Long, talks about different topics in sports, which include football, basketball, baseball, hockey, boxing, and more. The Executioner also invites special guests to talk about different topics within the sports world. So be sure that you catch the Cold Hard Truth on Sports every Tuesday night at 8:30 p.m. on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio. Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch other callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a blackout
level. What is it?
I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is off the top of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton's going to get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRM Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, folks, we are back here live on the Boxing Source. radio show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on queue. You'll be able to talk live on the show. We have a full, pretty much a full week of fights that happened that started basically on Wednesday and carried over into Saturday night. We had, notable fights all across the board, starting off on Wednesday night where we had, the feature fight on Premier Boxing Champions on ESPN, where the main event involved Arislandi Lara, also known as the American Dream. He had his fight there in Miami against John Zavek, and he put up the International Boxing Organization Super Welterweight Championship plus the WBA Super Welterweight Championships on the line there against John Zavek. Zavek is more of a guy that had his career at welterweight for pretty much most of his career. He did move up to super welterweight to challenge for the WBF World Super Welterweight title and did win it through a unanimous decision. He also held the IBF World Welterweight title and then eventually lost to Andre Berto. This was back in 2011. He also did fight Keith Thurman to a decision. It was pretty much a shutout win for Keith Thurman. So he's been in and out of the championship ranks in welterweight and super welterweight. But eventually, got KO'd by Arislandi Lara. I think he may have suffered an injury in the third round because it didn't seem like, he was willing to continue after kind of like a break. And he kind of like held his hand out because it seemed like he suffered an injury, but Lara didn't see that as him being injured, so he still ended up swinging at John Zavek and eventually scored the TKO victory over Zavek to keep his titles. People know that Lara is willing to go up to middleweight and challenge Gennady Golovkin for the titles that Golovkin has. But I'm not sure if Lara's really up to it, if Golovkin's up to it. And I kind of feel that Arislandi Lara should keep those super middleweight titles and challenge the guys that are in that specific division. Super welterweight, or the 154-pound division, is one of the deepest divisions in boxing, to me. You have, people like Demetrius Andrade, the Charlo brothers, Kirkland's out there, Austin Trout's still out there. K9 recently lost the belt to a Charlo, but he's still out there. Matheus Jan's out there. J-Rock Williams is out there. Anthony Mundine is out there. So there's like a good 7 or 8 valid contenders within the 154-pound division that Arislandi Lara can challenge out there to prove who is the best guy at 154. So, in the middle of defending his belts that he has, that he could still, challenge for, other belts that are in the 154-pound division. He could challenge Charlo. He could challenge the WBO champ, Liam Smith. WBC championship is currently vacant, so we're going to see what's going to happen with that title belt probably within the next few months or so. We just got to get a final decision on what the WBC is going to do in that instance. But at the same token, what's still left is for Arislandi Lara to do is try to see if he can get another bout with the high contender. I mean, PBC, he's under PBC right now, so I just named a good number of fighters that are still managed by Al Haymon, thin 154-pound division that Lara can fight, and it would be a great fight, whether it be on the PBC networks or on Showtime, to give you a pretty good fight there. So if that was the case, that Lara, if he couldn't get the challenge for Gennady Golovkin at middleweight, then there's a good amount of fights there at super welterweight, that Arislandi Lara can get. So that would be something to look out for in reference to Lara, to see if he will be able to get another big challenge there in the near future, within the next 3 or 4 months. Quickly moving on here before we get to the big news in the boxing world. We had a card on Saturday afternoon. There was another Premier Boxing Champions fight, or Premier Boxing Champions card that was on NBC. This was in Dallas, as we had one of the Charlo brothers eventually defend his title. Jamal Charlo was there at the main event in Dallas, defending his super welterweight belt. And he was able to win his fight against Wilkie Camphort by fourth round TKO. He retained the IBF super welterweight title, which was his first defense after scoring a 3-round TKO victory over Cornelius Canine Buttridge back on September 12th. So he was able to turn around and defend the belt against Wilkie Camphort. Camphort wasn't really a notable, some people would say he's not really a notable opponent for a Charlo. Not really was floating in and out of the 154-pound division and the 160-pound division. Had like a fairly good record there. Came in at 21-1, but you know, nothing really notable. No notable fights to contend for any type of championship belt beforehand. So to get this title shot all of a sudden was kind of weird for Wilkie Camphort to get something like that. So he was able to Charlo was able to get a few rounds in and still score the TKO victory over Wilkie Camphort. And like I said earlier with Arislandi Lara, Jamal Charlo seems to be another guy that may have to see if he could get a good fight out there within the super middleweight division. I mean, not the super middleweight, but the super welterweight division. His brother is most likely may fight for the WBC super welterweight belt. The announcement is not official. If Jermell Charlo, who is the number one contender in the WBC, will face Sean Jackson, who is the number two contender for the vacant WBC belt. But in reference to Jamal Charlo, other contenders that are out there are Michelle Soro, Julian J. Rock Williams, Joshua Clady, Austin Trout, are all within the, you know, top 11 or 12 rankings within the International Boxing Federation. Will Camford was currently, was at that point, number 14 in the IBF rankings that they had. So since he was within the top 15, Charlo was able to defend his belt and score the easy KO victory over Wilker Camphor. On the undercard for that fight with Charlo and Camphor, we had the Texas native Errol Spence Jr., who is, you know, not that far from Dallas. He's from DeSoto, Texas, Olympic prospect. Is still, you know, was going in there undefeated, was, you know, coming in at 18-0, pretty much a up-and-coming fighter within the welterweight division. Did have a couple of earlier fights. He had like a few, actually a good number of fights here in 2015, pretty much staying active over the past 2 years, including 2014. He had five fights in 2014, and this was his fourth fight here in 2015, and he went up against Alejandro Barrera, a, you know, veteran that had 29 fights in his record before challenging Errol Spence, and, you know, had given Errol Spence a little bit of work there for the first four rounds or so. You know, Errol Spence was able to make adjustments to Barrera's attack and was able to take him down once in round five. Then Barrera got up, and then another time Barrera got dropped in round five, and that pretty much sealed the deal for Mr. Errol Spence. So Errol Spence was able to move to 19-0. This is probably going to be, this most likely is his last fight of the year. So he's going to go into 2016. They're still undefeated at 19-0. We may see if he is going to challenge for one of the belts there at welterweight. You know, they still have the WBC belt open at welterweight with the likes of Danny Garcia and Amir Khan, Sean Porter, Lamont Peterson, Ghost Guerrero within the top five or six to be contenders for that vacant WBC belt. Errol Spence is floating around there within the WBC rankings. Also, you may see him floating there in the IBF rankings and WBA. So he has it around the, pretty much is around the first 10 people that are the to be contenders for the WBC, WBA, and IBF championship belts at welterweight. Did say for fight fans to look out for Errol Spence this year. It was a pretty active year for him, as I said. He did get four fights in this year. Was pretty much a undercard and a few of the Premier Boxing Champions fight cards, as we saw him, you know, be the undercard for Broner versus Porter back in June, and then, you know, the day before the September 12th set of fights that we had, he had him on Friday night against Chris Van Heerden too. So they're kind of like slowly putting him up there against a few veterans that have had at least, you know, 21 to 25 fights under their record before Errol Spence challenged him. So Let me see. So I'm just looking at what else I have here on slate. As we had like a full slate of fights there on Saturday. Like I said, the first fights that we had on Saturday was in Dallas, and you had Charlo being able to retain his title, and Errol Spence was able to keep his undefeated record there. So we do have that. Moving on to the next set of fights, where we're pretty much going to get into where the upsets kind of started. Before we get into that, you did have like a good little set of fights in Quebec City. One of them was a light heavyweight bout that involved two contenders there in the light heavyweight division. The WBC silver light heavyweight title was on the line as Elider Alvarez challenged Isaac Chalemba. And Alvarez was able to score the victory there and become the number one contender for the WBC light heavyweight championship, which is currently held by Adonis Stevenson. This one here between Chalemba and Alvarez was a 12-round fight. Became a majority decision win for Elider Alvarez. He's pretty much a Canadian. He resides in Montreal. This fight here was in Quebec City. And Chalemba was gaining for most of the fight, but Alvarez was able to score a close win as the scores were 114-114, 115-113, and 118-110, giving Alvarez a majority decision. I think that it's probably closer than 118-110. That pretty much seems like a far gap there for this win for Alvarez, but he is one of the top five, pretty much floating there within the top five or so in the light heavyweight division. Could be around top five or 10, still undefeated there. Has, 10 KOs, but, pretty much has scored a few decisions over the past six or seven fights. He did have a couple of TKO victories. One back in June 12th of this year, and last year in October 25th, scored one against an undefeated prospect, Rhino Liebenberg. But he was able to win this fight here in Quebec City to defend the WBC silver light heavyweight title and keep himself around as the number one contender for Adonis Stevenson's WBC light heavyweight championship. So I think he was able to see if he could contend for that. Since it's in Quebec City, you have Elider Alvarez, and you do have Adonis Stevenson. Both of those fighters really like to fight in Canada, whether it's Quebec City, Montreal, could be Toronto. That could set up a pretty good light heavyweight title fight next year if nothing really happens between Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalev, which we will get into later on in the show. Moving on within this card, we did have the IBF World Super Middleweight Championship on the line as the British champion, former gold medalist James DeGale, defended his IBF World Super Middleweight Championship against Lucian Boutte. Boutte is another guy that is from Canada. He's from Laval, not that far from Quebec City. He was a guy that held the IBF Super Middleweight Championship for a while, back up until 2011, or 2012, actually, as he lost the IBF title to Carl Fartz in the United Kingdom. But beforehand, he held the IBF Super Middleweight title from 2007 to 2011. So he had a pretty long reign with it before losing to Carl Fartz. And he had this opportunity to regain the IBF Super Middleweight Championship against James DeGale, but James DeGale was able to score the decision victory over Lucian Bute. Was a unanimous decision win by DeGale, 117-111 on two score cards and 116-112 on another. That pretty much said like a 2 9-3s and an 8-4. So DeGale was able to outbox Lucian Bute for most of the fight, gain the upper hand, and be able to retain the IBF Super Middleweight Championship. DeGale is probably one of the top guys within super middleweight. You do have the likes of Arthur Abraham. You do have Fedor Chudinov, Callum Smith, Badu Jack, all are out there. DeGale and Badu Jack may be the biggest fight that they could put together at super middleweight. They're probably the two best guys out there, with Abraham pretty much not that far behind. If they're not able to get DeGale and Jack together for a fight, then for another title unification fight, it could be either DeGale versus Abraham or Jack versus Abraham to have a unification bout there at super middleweight. Some say that DeGale is probably the best super middleweight out there. Andre Ward, who was at super middleweight, you know, for a while before he had his almost nearly a two-year holdout because of contractual reasons and other things. We pretty much know that Ward moved up to light heavyweight. So we will see Ward in the light heavyweight division here over the next year and a half. So right now we see that James DeGale, Badu Jack, Arthur Abraham, George Groves, and a few other guys are pretty much the ones at the top of the super middleweight division currently, so that we'll be able to see what happens with DeGale after this, is he is able to retain his belt. Do have guys that are number one contenders, just like such as Jose Escatgui, and Gilberto Ramirez is the number three contender in the IBF. So I'm not sure if one of those two guys will be able to challenge or get a shot at James DeGale for the IBF belt, but that's something that we will find out here later on. Real quick, we are going to go into a break, and then we are going to get into the upsets that we had yesterday. So you'll be able to get back with us here in a moment. This is a Boxing Source Radio Show, live on Blog Talk Radio, powered by the MRN Broadcasting Channel.
Hey, all, this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida, great licensed certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites, as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
All right, we are back here live on the Fox and Source radio show. The number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on queue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. All right, we are pretty much going to get into the upsets that happened yesterday, starting with the one that was on Showtime or Showbox, as we had in the 140-pound division, we had a young prospect there by the name of Amir Imam. Amir Imam was a top contender within the WBC and the WBA. A lot of people are talking about him being a valid challenger for the likes of Victor Postol or Adrian Broner if he was able to do this fight that he had here on Showbox. However, that wasn't the case, as the upset happened as Adrian Granados from Illinois, of all places, Illinois, how about that? Cicero, Illinois, was able to defeat Amir Imam and get a TKO victory over Imam in the eighth round. He was able to blitz Amir Imam from round one to round eight. Imam was trying to make adjustments to, you know, get away from the attack of Granados, but Granados was able to be persistent and, you know, continue to get on to Amir Imam. He had the upper hand in most of the fight. It seemed like the scorecards pretty much had him up by two rounds in two of the scorecards, and then he was able to get Imam on the ropes and was able to sustain an attack against him, and Imam could not make any adjustments to dodge the punches, number one, and number two, throw something in response to keep Granados at bay. And so Granados was able to keep on the attack and score, and then score the TKO victory over Imam to stop the undefeated streak of Amir, who came in there at 18-0. But now we have Granados, who shot up the rankings for most of the boxing publications out there, and he is now pretty much a top 10 guy within the BoxRec rankings that are out there. So BoxRec has him there at number 9. I'm not sure what the new rankings will be in the WBC and the WBA, since we had Amir Imam as number 1 in the WBC and number 2 in the WBA. And I'm sure that he will fall from those rankings. I think this was probably one of the shocking results that has happened over the course of the year here in the sport of boxing, as a lot of people bought stock in Amir Imam to at least get the win first and then move forward to see if he could challenge for one of those belts. But now, with this being his first loss on the docket, we are not sure what's going to happen with Amir Imam, especially since he was backed by
the well outspoken Don King, who was the last time that we saw Don King after Amir Imam's latest win, he was talking about Amir Imam challenging Floyd Mayweather. But now he has to deal with Imam's loss, knockout loss, to a guy that was floating, you know, back and forth within the 147-pound and 140-pound division. And this is a... this is something that may have Amir Imam not be amongst the talk within the boxing scene, and it may take him a good while for him to get back up and challenge for any of the belts. The quickest thing he may be able to do is see if he could get a rematch with Granados and see if he could get that win. But we're not sure how that's going to turn out for Amir Imam. This is something that he didn't expect, and that a lot of people didn't expect, actually. And he will have to see if he can make any adjustments to his defense, because I think that was his biggest flaw, is that he couldn't use his defense in order to dodge the punches that Adrian Granados had, and then Granados was able to sustain the attack and score the TKO victory. So that takes him on pretty much for now out of the race in the 140-pound division. So unless if somebody like a Victor Postol would be interested in giving him a shot, or maybe an Adrian Broner or something like that, then it'll be some time before we see what happens with Imam on the boxing scene. All right, now we're pretty much going to move forward. Everybody is talking about within the boxing scene, and something that is kind of bothering me a little bit, because I just picked Tyson Fury to score the upset victory over Vladimir Klitschko, and I've called it for weeks, and I didn't know what the odds were for this fight, but I just had that feeling that Tyson Fury was going to win the fight. And as we saw, he was able to win the fight. It was, for many people, it was a very uneventful fight, to say the least. We didn't get much action from Klitschko in the fight. And that was one of the biggest things that we took out of it, was that Klitschko didn't do much of anything in the whole fight. It was pretty much a shocking thing to me that Klitschko didn't hardly throw any punches, especially within the first few rounds. He didn't land hardly any power punches at all. Within the first four rounds or so, he just threw like a few jabs here and there. And as a total, Klitschko only threw 231 punches in 12 rounds. So that's below 20 punches per round. And he landed 52 within those 12 rounds. So that's barely over 4 punches landed per round by the 39-year-old Vladimir Klitschko, who had multiple title belts that were on the line, including the IBO title, the WBA title, the IBF title, and the WBO title. All four of those titles were on the line, plus the Lineal Heavyweight Championship, and Klitschko just didn't throw anything for the first few rounds, and he only had the last couple of rounds, the 11th and 12th, where he kind of rocked Fury a little bit in the past, in the last few things, but in the first part of the whole fight, it was just that Fury kind of like controlled it, was moving around the ring and giving Klitschko different looks, moving his head, moving his body, switching from conventional stance to southpaw, throwing punches. I wouldn't necessarily say in punches, but it was through some different angles. And it kind of like threw off Klitschko a little bit, but the other thing was is that Klitschko still didn't even throw anything to get Fury off his game. And that was the thing that kind of like shocked a lot of people within Dusseldorf, Germany, is that Klitschko didn't do anything at the very least for four rounds. And that was kind of like the shocking thing that a lot of people saw within this fight that happened between Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko. So now Tyson Fury is the unified heavyweight champion of the world, undefeated there. At 25-0, young guy there, pretty much at 27 years old, and seems like he'll be able to defend these championship belts that he has, as he, you know, stepped up in competition just last year, actually pretty much a year ago to the day. He did KO Steve Cunningham and did win the British heavyweight titles against Derek Chisora last year, but there was just something that said that he was going to be the guy to defeat Vladimir Klitschko. During the fight, you did have, if you were watching it on HBO during the fight, you heard a lot of the commentary from the guys there, Jim Lampley, Max Kellerman, and Ward Jones Jr. And it's something that was pointed out by Ward Jones Jr. and to an extent Max Kellerman, is that Vladimir Klitschko didn't really throw anything towards the body of Tyson Fury to gas out Tyson Fury. I think that Klitschko's plan was the same plan that he's had almost for the past 10-plus years or so, is that as the bigger man, he was going to smother his opponent and get to tire his opponent and then take him out in the later rounds. The only issue here is that Tyson Fury was a taller man, Tyson Fury was a bigger man, and Tyson Fury was a more active person. So, once you had all of that, then you can't just go in there and smother a bigger guy and not throw anything. You had Vladimir Klitschko just get in there, throw some punches, and not do anything at all. Vladimir Klitschko just didn't do anything once he was in the clinch against Tyson Fury. Didn't throw any body shots, nothing like that. So with him not throwing any body shots to tire out Tyson Fury once they were in the clinch, Tyson Fury was able to still do what he was able to do. Yeah, there was some cases where there was rabbit punches here and there by Tyson Fury, and he did get a point deducted for it. But in the clinch, Tyson Fury was a more active person. Outside, Tyson Fury was a more active person, controlled the ring, was able to bounce around the ring, which was kind of a notable thing there before the fight, as they had a specific padding that was on the ring before the fight. And they had to have it removed because it was something that had an effect on a lot of fighters to limit their mobility. So they weren't able to, they were able to remove that. And I think Tyson Fury was able to still move around the ring and do what he needed to do in order to score the win. All right. Right now we have somebody on the line here. Let's see. We have area code 770. What's going on with you? 770, you're on live. Hello, 770, you able to hear me? All right, hold on just a minute. All right, seems like they weren't able to get in here, so let's see if you're able to try to get back on and see if you can get on. Once again, folks, the number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, it's 347-237-5539. And then you press the number one key to get on cue. You'll be able to speak on live on the show. Just getting back on to the heavyweight championship fight that was in Dusseldorf, Germany, between Tyson Fury and Vladimir Klitschko, as Tyson Fury was able to score the unanimous decision victory over Klitschko. I was speaking on the little issue that they had with the ring before the fight, and that they had to take away some padding before the fight. And that was kind of notable by a few people, specifically Lennox Lewis, who was at ringside for the fight. But it seemed like it didn't affect Tyson Fury after they removed that ring padding, and he was able to move around the ring, bounce around here and there, give Vladimir Klitschko different looks, which I think that Klitschko expected in this fight. And I think that in addition to that, I think Klitschko was kind of, I wouldn't say he was unmotivated, but I think he was affected by Tyson Fury leading up to the fight. If you were seeing what was happening in these press conferences that were happening when Tyson Fury came in there, came in and won as dressing up as Batman, and one other one where he was basically going off on Vladimir Klitschko, and then you have the, you know, the face-off where he was talking to Klitschko and said he wouldn't be surprised if Klitschko found a way to claim an injury to delay the fight. And remember, this fight was supposed to happen in October, on October 24th, I think it was. And Klitschko wasn't able to make that because 2 days after that face-off, he came up with an injury. So they delayed it until November 28th. And then what happened was, here on November 28th, he was able to score, Tyson Fury was able to score the decision victory, as he was able to outbox Vladimir Klitschko. And Klitschko, for, in some people's eyes, seemed like they became old. Seems like he became old overnight. Like I said, in the final punch stats, he only threw 231 punches in 12 rounds. That's kind of crazy that somebody that has all of those, that's been the champion for 10 years and defended the title multiple times within those 10 years, was able to throw 231 punches in 12 rounds. And to only land 23% of those punches is, you know, kind of bad, bad ratio. The only thing is that it seems like Tyson Fury himself was only able to land 23% of his punches, even though he threw 371 punches for this fight. He was still only able to land 23% of his punches. So it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't necessarily a, you know, knockdown, drag, slugfest type of a fight. Wasn't, you know, something where it was a clinch. I wouldn't necessarily say it was a clinch fest, but some people may say that it was. All I know is that, you know, Tyson Fury was able to control the pace of the fight pretty much from rounds 1 to round 12, except in round, probably in like rounds 11 and 12, Klitschko was able to get, you know, a few good punches in to win the rounds, but overall it wasn't enough to win them the fight. Once again, real quick, we got a few minutes left here on the live section of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. Pretty much going to move into news that's happening within the sport. Over the week, we got some confirmation on news that is happening in the Premier Boxing Champions side of things. Is next year they'll have a bout featured on January 23rd. Be on Fox. So we'll have Premier Boxing Champions on Fox January 23rd. And the first main event that they're going to have on Fox for Premier Boxing Champions will involve Danny Garcia, who is a former 140-pound champion. And he will have his undefeated 31-0 record on the line there against Robert the Ghost Guerrero. And this will be at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. So we'll have Danny Garcia versus Robert the Ghost Guerrero on January 23rd there for Premier Boxing Champions. Yeah, Danny Garcia, like I said, had multiple belts in the 140-pound division, the WBC belt, and the WBA belt. He recently moved up to 147 pounds and defeated Pauly Malignaggi. And so now his next fight will be against Robert the Ghost Guerrero, who, you know, has had notable fights over the past couple of years. He did defeat Andre Berto to move forward to fight Floyd Mayweather on May of 2013. Did have a fight against Keith Thurman in the first Premier Boxing Champions telecast that was out there on March 7th of this year. Didn't lose that fight, and then turn around and fought Aaron Martinez in Carson, California. Score a split decision victory where many said that Martinez won the fight. So he's still able to be out there for, be out there to challenge Danny Garcia next year, which will be a pretty interesting fight in the ring and pretty much outside the ring too, as we have two notable trainers will be involved here, as the fathers of both Danny Garcia and Robert Guerrero are the trainers, and both of them like to talk a lot, as many of us do know. So we'll be able to see what happens here with this fight. I think that Robert Guerrero is pretty much on his way down, while Danny Garcia is just, you know, slowly getting himself acclimated to the 147-pound division. So right now, I'm pretty much favorite Danny Garcia in this fight. I'll see where Robert Guerrero could probably give a challenge to Danny Garcia. I think that Guerrero might have the height and reach advantage, but I'm not sure if he's still, up and able to give a good challenge to Robert Guerrero. It may be a good little fight for the first few rounds or so, but he may not be able to weather the storm there for 12 full rounds. So we will see what's going to happen here for that particular bout on January 23rd. We do have something there beforehand where we had Deontay Wilder, who is the WBC champion. He will be able to defend his title in January. We'll have to see who it will be against, as it's going to be a voluntary defense. His number one contender, Alexander Povetkin, is still waiting on his title shot. He did have a recent fight in a couple of weeks ago, so I think that they will be having Deontay Wilder defend against Alexander Povetkin later on in 2016, probably around April or May of 2016. But on the 16th of January, Deontay Wilder will defend his title against somebody at the Barclays. So we're going to be seeing who is going to be the person to challenge for that WBC heavyweight championship on that date. Other news that we have here is that the middleweight title fight between Andy Lee and Billy Joe Saunders that's on December 19th will be picked up on Showtime. So we'll be able to see Andy Lee defend his title against Billy Joe Saunders, who is undefeated. And then it will be picked up by Showtime, as this was a fight that was originally scheduled for, I think it was in October, but it got pushed back. But I was able to be picked up on December 19th here. And so we're going to see what's going to happen with Andy Lee, as his latest fight was a draw against Peter Kidd Chocolate Quillen. And he was able to keep the belt via draw, even though Quillen wasn't able to win the belt because he came into that fight overweight. But we're going to see what happens here with this Lee Saunders fight, is that may shape what happens within the middleweight division come 2016, as we have one more fight, key fight coming up that's going to be on Showtime, when we have Daniel Jacobs going up against Peter Quillen at the Barclays on December 12th for the regular WBA championship for middleweight. So we have that, and we have that. That's going to be the Battle of Brooklyn there at the Barclays on December 12th, and then you have the title fight between Andy Lee and Billy Joe Saunders for the WBO title. So that'll sort out a few more things there for the middleweight division, as we have Gennady Golovkin as the WBA champ, Canelo Alvarez the WBC champ,
Golovkin's the IBF champ as well, and Andy Lee's the WBO champion, and that'll be able to sort itself out. This is pretty much the overtime portion of the show, where we go over a few more things within news and tidbits out there in the sport of boxing. Let's see, you know, what else is out there within the sport. So we're just going to get through a few little news and tidbits out there, and then we'll close out. Like I said, we went through pretty much most of the stuff that happened over the weekend in the sport of boxing, as we had Tyson Fury win the unified heavyweight championship belts and is now the lineal heavyweight champion. He did have James Taguil defend his IBF super middleweight championship against Lucian Bouté in Canada and was able to win that fight. Eleider Alvarez was able to be the number one contender for the WBC light heavyweight championship, as he was able to win his fight via decision. Jermell Charlo was able to defend his super welterweight belt against Wilkie Camfort. Errol Spence Jr. was able to score a TKO victory. And the other upset that happened was that Amir Imam lost his first bout to Adrian Granados via TKO. So we had a full slate of boxing there on Saturday, and then we also had on Wednesday the American Dream, Arislandi Lara, defend his super welterweight belts in Miami and score a TKO victory there too. So pretty much was an active board of boxing there, and we still have a few more cards left over in the next few weeks before the close of the year. So we have something going on for December 5th, 12th, and 19th to be able to look at. And it seems like we also may look towards next year as the welterweight champion Kell Brook is looking to try to get a fight done with the WBO champion Timothy Bradley next year, which would be a great, great, great unification fight in the welterweight division, as these two guys are amongst the two best guys within the welterweight division. So if they're able to make that fight happen, it will pretty much be the best fight that they could put together in the welterweight class so far. So if they're able to make that happen, it would be very, very, very good. Very good in that aspect. And be able to clear things out within the welterweight division. We still have the thing with Manny Pacquiao. Fighting, scheduled to fight on April 9th. We don't have a particular opponent for that fight yet, but that may be settled within the next few weeks or so, or at least by January, to see who he will fight. And then we'll see who that opponent will be. That'll be some news, as that is expected to be Manny Pacquiao's last fight. All right, and seeing what other things are out there. I mean, we had something where Adonis Stevenson said he was open to challenging Sergey Kovalev to unify the light heavyweight belts, but it seems like it's been a back and forth between those two over the past year and a half. It seems like both of these guys have had their chances to where they could have made something happen to fight each other, but couldn't make that possible. So
It's still a waiting game to see if that fight will be able to place. I mean, we know that Sergey Kovalev is down to fight Andre Ward at the near the end of 2016. If Andre Ward has two fights under his belt within the light heavyweight division, so I'm not necessarily sure that he will be able to put something together with Adonis Stevenson and Sergey Kovalev before that fight between Ward and Kovalev takes place. So that's something that we'll be able to keep our eye on within the sport of boxing within the next few weeks to see if Stevenson and Kovalev can make a fight happen or if something else takes place. We do know that Sergey Kovalev is scheduled to fight Jean Pascal back in Canada on January 30th. So we do have a rematch there already that's put in place. So it seems like Kovalev has tentatively two fights in 2016 already lined up, ready to go. Can't necessarily say the same for Adonis Stevenson. So that is a wait-and-see approach in that aspect. With that being said, I think that we pretty much close out the show here fairly early. I mean, we did have the long weekend, so people are getting back acclimated to, you know, getting back to work and other things like that. So we'll get right back into it next week, where we will look into the fights that are going to happen in the Barclays Center and elsewhere in the sport. So be able to catch that. And also on the MRN broadcasting channel, catch our sister shows, the Cold Truth on Sports, Tuesday, 8:30 p.m. with the Executioner Matthew Mung as the host. And on Wednesdays at 8:30, you have the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show with Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Clausel Mathis, Tony Watley, myself, a few other guests out there too, talking about football, college football, NFL football, and the news and notes within that sport too. So catch those two shows on the MRN Broadcasting Channel, and we will be back here next week, Sunday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Like I said, the end of every show, Point of Boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good one.